My intention was to go through very quickly a primer of sorts of what telehealth is all about, and then emphasize sort of the policy implications given the topic and the theme of this year's annual meeting. Very quickly, as Ayanna mentioned, I work under the auspices of the Regional Coordinating Center at Morehouse School of Medicine, and I'd like to thank both the leadership as well as our general collaborators, some of whom I will be specifically referring to later in my talk. She mentioned our areas of support, and specifically with respect to the project that I'm entrusted with. Our aims are very clear. We believe that in the wake of a disaster in the noted or then predicted, now realized health disparities, that age-appropriate, culturally competent care should be delivered. But in this devastating situation that we know where capacity is knocked down to almost nothing and need has increased at just an astronomical rate, how might we best do that? And we posit that a reproducible, sustainable telehealth model is one solution to entertain. Following landfall in August, just an indescribable situation but from a public health perspective occurred. The folks at Brown conducted a survey looking at voters and the migration of voters given the approaching election coming up. I think that this table of displaced population gives you a sense of just a massive in and efflux of folks from their normal sort of habitats and homes. And this is presented with this presents a challenge from a public health and clinical perspective in the sense that where are our patients? And for many months, and in some sense, it continues to be the case, physicians have been completely disconnected from that. On the other side, for the folks that stuck around, the ones that weren't displaced in New Orleans, the Kaiser Family Foundation folks have confirmed what pretty much anyone would suspect, and that is these folks are suffering from some significant physical and mental difficulties. And not only are they suffering from these, but it's more likely than not that they're suffering in more than one area. And such a morbidity is essentially what's creating this increased need in the wake of a diminished capacity. And what do we know about this capacity? Looking at the statistics from the Louisiana State Medical Boards, there was a drop of approximately 500 or so docs from after landfall, and that doesn't seem to be a whole lot. And in fact, just to update these numbers, in the prior session I learned that we're roughly at about 80% pre-Katrina numbers with respect to our workforce. But the point that I would draw is that much like the population where we saw this massive exodus out of New Orleans populating most parts of central and northern Louisiana, of course the doctors are going to follow that same sort of curve. And so for this, the remaining folks in the greater New Orleans area, we have fewer services, fewer physicians, and just a dire situation. There's no really easy way to paint this indescribable perfect storm of public health crisis. Moving to telehealth as a potential solution, because in the end, I want to sort of blow past all of that stuff, stop talking about problems, and start focusing on solutions. And so, for those of you who may or may not know, I tend to adopt HRSA's Office for the Advancement of Telehealth's definition of telehealth. All you really need to concern yourself with are that telehealth focuses on three principal areas: clinical services, education, and administration, which would include professional development and training. Those three sort of primary domain areas tend to lead to a confusion with respect to terminology. You'll hear folks band around all sorts of terms, from telemedicine, telepsychiatry, telehealth. I favor telehealth because it tends to be broad and inclusive. Telemedicine tends to infer that you're dealing with clinical services, when in fact we're dealing with much more than that. Specific activities, like some would describe me as a telepsychiatrist. I deliver clinical services to incarcerated juveniles to two different sites in Louisiana. And incidentally, I do it from the comfort of my home in Baltimore. That sort of a living example of the power and the efficiency and the sort of the novel workflow models that you can develop through technology. But it's important that we all sort of come together and find a common lexicon. And and therefore I continue to advocate the use of telehealth as the all-inclusive word, and then attaching qualifiers. So I'm a psychiatric telehealth clinician, something like that. The other aspect of terminology that I'd like to educate you all on is the notion of synchronicity. Dr. Buckner previously talked about some of the RCC's efforts with respect to personal health records and electronic medical records. These are support solutions that could be described as asynchronous, meaning they're store and forward solutions where data is captured and viewed at a later time. What I tend to focus on are synchronous solutions. We're talking real-time exchanges using audio and video data of communications, encounters, if you will, that are translated from the traditional to the technologic. Why do this? Most people tend to sort of look at me with a furrowed brow and they think that I'm trying to replicate some sort of Jetsons model of healthcare. And my reason is very simple. A lot of the advocates for telehealth will talk to you about bringing care to places where there is none. Remote places in Montana, the bushland of New Zealand, or wherever you are. I think distance tends to miss the point. I focus on access. Whether you're 500 miles or 5 blocks from services, if you can't get in, that's a serious problem. And access to care remains perhaps the greatest challenge to a functioning healthcare system, let's say, of which I would say the U.S. does not have. And if we can respond to access, perhaps through telehealth, we would realize innumerable benefits, some of which I'll identify in just a minute. But right now, I can't say that with any definitive rigor. When you go through the literature, there's lots of qualitative stuff suggestive of the benefits of telehealth. But to be perfectly blunt with you, we're still in our infancy, despite the fact that folks have been sort of exploring and utilizing technologic solutions for decades. We have yet to really come together and develop a rigorous evidence in support of that, but we at the RCC hope to change that. Finally, for those who persist, those who I tend to dub the what-ifs, ifers, who tend to be obstructionist about exploring these novel solutions, my response to them is quite simple. If this is not something that you're even remotely interested in, that's fine, because in no way am I advocating this as to be a universal solution. But for those situations where traditional models are failing, consider this. If your options are nothing or something, how could we not explore something? But given that, I think it's important to add to it a measure of some degree of caution, largely because a lot of the folks who preceded me, and I'm the first to admit that I'm sort of new to the game. I've been out of training for just a couple few years, and I've really tried to develop some level of expertise with respect to the appropriate integration of technology, because a lot of the examples in the past, well-intended efforts in the past that are now sort of defunct programs, it's very easy to sort of get caught up in the sexy. You can throw up a lot of flashy things with respect to the technology and impress, but it's important that we actually get down to the meat and bones of what it is that comprises an appropriate, sustainable model, and we'll talk about some of those features shortly. Some folks, when they think of telehealth, they think of three principal areas: the sort of the hardware, the wiring solution that connects it, and the sites that are sort of coming together. If it were as simple as bringing these three components together and turning it on, I wouldn't be talking to you today. But there are complexities associated with all of these things. But I believe that that's a discussion for another time. In the end, we take these sorts of hardware solutions and we bring them together with hopefully cost-effective wiring solutions. To draw to one example, the graphic that I put up there is actually a representation of what's called the Internet 2 Abilene network. Is anybody familiar with Internet 2? It's actually an academic-based network. It's principally sponsored in Indiana. And in fact, if you have any affiliation with any level of school, it's likely that you use the Internet too. And this is an enormous pipe, bandwidth-wise. And it's woefully underutilized. And it's the absence of understanding available assets and resources that has folks going out and laying out redundant wiring solutions, which again sort of undercut the potential success and sustainability of any telehealth model that one might construct in a place of need. Need is also a very interesting notion when it comes to site selection. You'll note that I actually place it at the bottom of sort of these key features, because what's most important is if you choose to explore the possibility of developing a telehealth solution, early on, it's a bit of a treacherous path, and you want to make sure that whatever resources you expend to that, you get a lot of bang for your buck up front, that you have recruited appropriate sort of levels of interest and capacity. As a clinician, when I engage a potential clinical site, those are some of my first questions, rather than, do you actually need my services? Now, of course, in the end, we at the RCC advocate for places of great need, but it's kind of hard not to hit a place of great need when you're talking about the Gulf Coast. And ultimately, we try to structure a model of care that, much like any program development process, starts with identifying services and sort of going through this iterative process of building it, checking it out, and updating it or modifying it, depending on what you find through the assessment process. And it's that recurring and iterative process that I think ultimately leads to a sustained, mature telehealth site. The trick is, not a lot of folks get there. But why is that? Well, mostly because we never get towards confirming any one of these anticipated benefits. Again, I mentioned to you that there's a lack of rigor. When you actually look at the literature out there, there's lots of lovely qualitative studies that say, hey, look at what we did. We sort of put all this stuff together and we saw so many people and they said they were satisfied. It's less than fully helpful. And until we can sort of come together, and one of our missions in the RCC on the research side, which is one of our six principal specific areas, is, or at least my hope is, with respect to the telehealth, I'm currently in the process of lighting up sites. When we have a number of sites lit up, the idea is if we can pool our results, we might actually be able to generate a conclusion of some rigor, which will hopefully support the idea that telehealth solutions are absolutely responsive. The fact that I can, to give you a real-world example, I was late getting down to D.C. from Baltimore today because when I woke up, I got an email from one of my prison clinics that one of my patients cut on herself last night. So I called them up, said, what's going on? And they sort of gave me the background, and I set up an emergency session first thing tomorrow morning. And then I got in the car and I came down here, and so I'll be late again tomorrow. But the fact that I'm able to sort of respond in that way is something that I have yet to find in sort of nature, in a traditional sort of care setting, particularly when it comes in terms of travel. I have also been a physician as a tourist. Traveling to the Gulf Coast routinely as I do, there have been occasions in New Orleans where I've been able to come in doing RCC work and see a couple of prison kids from some collaborative colleagues of mine at LSU and Tulane using their setup, and then giving care as a tourist is a notion that I'm still sort of figuring out as far as a benefit. But back to the benefits that we're hoping to prove, telehealth will likely demonstrate an improvement in the quality of care, both in, you know, much more so than just its responsiveness. I believe it to be clinically equivalent. It's certainly cost-effective. And ultimately, the power will come when we're able to deliver evidence-based care, that age-appropriate, culturally competent care that I referred to, and we start demonstrating these transfers of knowledge to client sites or patient sites that historically lacked the level and the quality of care. Buzzwords bandied around in the public health community happen to be this idea of knowledge transfer, of evidence-based practices, and these technology solutions are perfectly suited towards realizing that sort of goal. And ultimately, we're redefining what it is to be a clinician in delivering clinical services. A lot of folks think of telehealth and use the analogy of the wheel, with the provider at the hub that spoke out to a variety of sites. I actually have a kind of a problem with this analogy because this is an analog image. The technology of the telehealth solutions that I showed you can do so much more than what a wheel can. And in fact, a better representation was found in a 1964 article put out by Rand that the Air Force had requested. And this gentleman, Mr. Barron, had talked about the digital communications network for the Air Force with respect to the survivability in a wartime setting of their command and control operations. And he submitted these three sort of structures. I like this progression not only as different ways of conceiving of communication between multiple sites, but I actually look at them as an evolutionary progression from A through C. And in fact, if C, the distributed network, is our goal, another buzzword we tend to sort of bat around is the idea of a public health safety net. And so clearly one looks like a net. And so just to give you some idea of how these various representations work, when the RCC first got into it, we identified a number of partners, and we began with federally qualified health centers. An FQHC represents one of these sorts of centralized areas where we were able to light that site up, and they were able to deliver care to patients from around their catchment area, but we were able to port in a psychiatrist to that centralized site. And in fact, our very first site that we lit up last March in Baton Rouge at an FQHC called Excel, we've been delivering services there since March, half a day a week, and our physician is in Oregon. Dr. Norwood Knight Richardson is the vice chair at Oregon Health Sciences. We're currently collaborating with folks in Biloxi, Bayou-Labatry, and Houston to demonstrate similar sites. Now, I mentioned to you that as we move to C, they're sort of an evolution. So once these sites have become implemented, there's a development or a growing process. And in fact, examples of a decentralized telehealth solution include things like the Children's Health Fund, who you may or may not know is a New York-based advocacy group, and they pimp out these mobile units, and they're able to deliver service in these rolling mobile units. We're about to light up a number of sites in collaboration with Project Fleur de Lis, which is based out of the Mercy Family Health Center in New Orleans. I believe it's a 55-school-based collaborative initiative where they have a three-tier surveillance, screening, and care model that will likely be the model to replicate throughout the region. Doug Walker, who heads up Project Fleur de Lis, has done a remarkable job, and we're very pleased to be working with them. Another organization called Counseling Solutions are bringing together a five-parish collaborative towards the delivery of mental health services, and our hope is to key in one of the academic centers to provide physician support to these mid-level health professionals who are doing most of the heavy lifting and carrying much of the water with respect to caring for the mental health needs of South Louisiana. And more recently, we've also entered into a collaborative agreement with Mobile Mental Health, which is a physician group, and this was sort of, we've taken our model and we flipped it. We engaged a psychiatric physician group who are interested in this, and we're helping to support them in their sort of plan to cover the state, the state's needs in a variety of different sites. And in fact, ultimately, this private physician group, because they were the last one standing effectively, has now become the de facto Department of Psychiatry at the University of South Alabama, which Dr. Arrieta hails from. And so there are interesting sort of outcomes as a result of persistence. And we've been very lucky at the RCC to sort of pick the folks that have been able to sustain their presence throughout these very, very difficult two and change years. And we're hoping to start realizing some sustained success. And finally, the idea of transitioning to this mature telehealth scenario. Now, these are still sort of theoretical as far as I'm concerned. I'm still in the implementation phase, engaging collaborators, helping to get them the equipment, teach them how to use it, and ultimately introduce them together. But I have very clear visions of how these telehealth sites might demonstrate increased power. And one example would be the idea of knowledge transfer. We have collaborators in Texas who did a remarkable job caring for the Vietnamese population who were displaced from Louisiana post-Katrina and Rita. We also have collaborators in Alabama who have historically, even before the storms, been caring for this very culturally isolated ethnic group in South Alabama who are shrimpers and fishermen in that region. If we're able to introduce the Texas folks who can then help the Alabama folks in addressing this cultural issue. How amazing would that be? Likewise, another example would be the idea of what I call a distance repatriation. Through one of our collaborators, AMHA, the All Healers Mental Health Alliance, we've been able to identify a number of minority physicians who have been scattered to the wind across the country, who have now established new roots in other communities and are simply just trying to survive. For those of you who are clinicians, I encourage you to sort of think about the idea of ripping yourself out of your current practice without any warning and having to plant yourself somewhere else. It's traumatic, especially given the relationships you have. Here we have an opportunity to actually bring those docs back to their patients without having them to have that sort of forcible ripping out and rerouting through technology. And I find that to be an extraordinarily powerful statement in supporting the region. And so what this demonstrates, this sort of idea of a distributed telehealth network, is we're starting to expand our perspective from the single site to a much broader geographic area. And this sort of broader perspective raises a number of policy implications, because the current landscape with regard to regulatory and legislative and legal understandings and conceptions of telehealth are completely inconsistent and actually undercut any potential for success of telehealth. I'd like to start talking about policy implications with the use of this. The Gardner Group has this notion of a hype cycle, and they use this to describe how technology comes into our society and sort of incorporates into the fabric of our daily lives. And I point to you the sort of natural progression where you have a peak, and then what I love the name of it, the trough of disillusionment. This is a tough trough to get out of, and all technology runs through this cycle. And for those that are able to get out of the trough and hit that plateau of productivity, that's when they become something like this, or something like this, or that, right? These sort of ubiquitous pieces of technology that we use all the time that we don't even think about. But telehealth is not quite there yet. I mean, in fact, back in 2005, I wish I had a pointer, but you can see that video conferencing, there it is firmly square in that trough of disillusionment. And so what's going to push us out into that plateau? Well, in fact, this is an opportunity for our legislators and our policymakers to help get us out of there. Is it their sole responsibility? I don't think so. But there are a handful of areas to address the challenges of telehealth, which are many, that we might be able to talk about. And I'm going to focus pretty much on the first couple. But as you can see, there are challenges from every arena and from every dimension that only together, and some would argue that all we need is time, because eventually all of the various folks, the players involved in it, whether it's academia, the private sector, or the government, will eventually come together and we'll sort of figure this out together. But that's going to take a long time, and unfortunately time is not something that the folks in the Gulf Coast have. And so we at the RCC are really trying to sort of push out of that trough. Let's talk about licensure. Most of you can pretty much figure out the fact that current licensure laws are incompatible with telehealth work models. Specifically, they're state-based, and that's understandable, because state-level licensure boards are charged with the protection of their peoples. And I'm a firm believer in state rights. But as somebody who currently maintains 3 active medical licenses, largely because I'm insane and I'm way out on a branch, I have absolutely no expectation for anybody else hoping to sort of join me on the branch to do the same, because it would be cost prohibitive. And in fact, for me to continue the work, it's likely that I'll have to pick up 3 more in Texas, Mississippi, and Alabama in order for me to effectively demonstrate sort of what I'm talking about here. And that just makes absolutely no sense. So what can we do? Well, the RCC has actually engaged the Federation of State Medical Boards, who also has high interest in a national telehealth license, because they understand that these are incompatible. This is an incompatible situation. And one of the things I like to identify is shortly after the storms hit, Governor Blanco declared Emergency Declaration 46XLV 412, which essentially said, if you're a licensed clinician of any stripe and you come to the state of Louisiana to help us out in this time of need, you're good. There was automatic reciprocity, and there was no additional cost ascribed to it. And so if we're willing to do that, and the other thing to mention about this declaration was it was time limited. I think it ran for 6 months, and then it was extended for 3 months. The problem is disaster response and recovery is not time limited. And in fact, many would say that we're currently responding to a disaster crisis. So we need, not only do we need to change it in terms of time, but we also need to change it in terms of how it's worded. Because the way this declaration is worded is any physician within the state was good. What I propose and what the RCC proposes is the physicians don't have to go anywhere, but we can bring them down with technology, and they're able to actually do a better job because technology allows us to offer a half a day a week every week for 2 years rather than coming down for 2 weeks, which is well-intended and all, but that whatever it is that they do for those 2 weeks then dissipates quickly when they have to leave and return to their lives. And so this idea of this volunteerism, this goodwill, how do we harness that? Because they certainly need the capacity. Licensure is going to be one of those challenges that we're going to need to sort of resolve. Malpractice is another big one that has a lot of people flummoxed about how do we, you know, figure out the idea of malpractice. Are we talking, you know, is it, and I don't know if there are any lawyers in the audience, but if something, God forbid, should happen, do you try it where the doc is or do you try it where the patient is? Well, most legal opinions tend to favor where the patient is, where the care is actually delivered. And I actually agree with that. One footnote with respect to malpractice, I mean, this is an enormous issue that will take a long time to sort out, but we at the RCC have had one success, and it's one that I'm very proud of, and that is in lighting up our federally qualified health center in Baton Rouge, we were able to get HRSA to essentially approve our request to have our teleclinician, who's in Oregon, delivering services in Louisiana, be covered under the Federal Tort Claims Act, which effectively gives him immunity. And as for those of you who may know, the FTCA was created by the federal government to give FQHCs, I'm sorry about all the acronyms, protections and just a little bit breathing room so that they wouldn't have to worry about malpractice, so that they can actually deliver care to folks who needed it the most. And the fact that HRSA had the vision to look at teleclinicians just like any other clinician is an important precedent that we're hoping to exploit further in coming up with some reasonable malpractice telehealth solution. The final challenge that I'll discuss is the idea of financial. It always comes down to the dollar, whether it's reimbursement or federal funding towards telehealth. With respect to reimbursement, current laws essentially talk about things in terms of HPSAs or health professional shortage areas and non-metropolitan statistical areas. Well, what is that effectively saying about telehealth reimbursement? It's effectively saying we will only reimburse for rural people, places where we don't have doctors. And as I mentioned to you before, it's not about geography, it's about access. And so what about New Orleans with New Orleans or Biloxi or Bayou La Batrie or Houston in some ways, which are neither health professional shortage. Well, actually, I believe New Orleans may actually be one now, but because they don't fall in that historic mold of where we're pushing telehealth, we can't reimbursement becomes a big question mark. Now, we're actually challenging that at Excel, and I'm working with the staff there to see if the government will pay us for the services delivered, but that has not yet happened, although we hope to see that through. The RCC is also hoping to engage CMS. CMS has high interest in it. And if we can wrap a telehealth solution around a disease management approach, given the fact that we have high levels of mental health issues that are being cared for in primary care settings, any payer, whether it's CMS or another, has great interest in trying to figure out how to stem the tide of rising medical and psychiatric issues, because ultimately that leads to increased cost. One final aspect to the financial challenge is, I'll direct you to the Labor, Health, and Human Services Appropriations Bill, which just got through the Senate on the 19th of October. This is a bill sponsored by Senator Thune, I believe from San Diego, and others. And they, in their wisdom, shockingly, authorized $13.8 million funding the Office of the Advancement of Telehealth. This is more than double its last year, and that almost never happens in Congress. Oftentimes you have that sort of slow whittling down process when it comes to budgeting. So that's an extraordinary thing. It's now currently in discussion with on the other side of Congress, who I believe started, it's always a negotiation. Well, Congress actually started at $0. So where are we going to be between $0 and 13.8? I certainly hope more on the latter. And in fact, this is an opportunity, if you have ever asked yourself, what could you do? You could contact your congressman and say to support funding the Office of the Advancement of Telehealth. What does this money do? Well, it flows towards folks like us, to pilot programs, to clinics and clinical environments of all sorts, struggling to figure out a way to develop and sustain telehealth solutions. And while our long-term goal is to seek parity with respect to reimbursement, licensure, and all that, so that a teleclinician functions essentially just like a clinician with all of the same challenges, we're not quite there. Until then, we're going to need the support of people like the Office of the Advancement of Telehealth, and that's why those sorts of funding opportunities are so, so vital. And so, once again, tell your congressman to vote yay on the LHHS bill with full funding for OAT. In the end, it is my pleasure to work with the RCC in the Gulf Coast. It's my self-identified home. I spent 11 years in New Orleans, and every time I go, the situation is clear. And while it remains dire and bleak, I do believe we've turned a corner. Folks are coming out of the anger phase, and I think they're more just exhausted and more receptive to help. But there's high need, limited capacity, and these solutions are not easy. It's going to take us 10, 15 years to sort them out. I think telehealth is going to get us there a little quicker for all the reasons that I recounted. And when we think about it in the broad picture, we definitely need to engage our policymakers towards creating a more hospital environment. Otherwise, we're simply going to repeat the past of having the landscape riddled with the corpses of well-intended programs who are now defunct. Thank you very much for your time. Oh, well, the final thing, access, not geography. If that's the only take-home point, I think it's an important one because it frames how you approach the idea of telehealth tremendously. I hope I didn't run over time. Thank you so much.